coming up next. It's hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to Future Tuesday. Ah, yes. Beautiful day today in Santa Cruz. Sunny skies today after a rather surprising little rain dump yesterday and the night before. That was pretty amazing.
And much appreciated.
Yeah, very appreciated, though I had just gotten a bunch of wood. We just split some wood and hadn't covered it yet.
Oh, well, now we have to use that fire to get the steam out of the wood.
Yeah.
We're pretty good at getting steam out of the wood.
Yeah, may that be the most of my problems, huh?
Right. So
I did burn some. It worked pretty well, actually.
Yeah, that was a toasty fire.
Wasn't
boy,
it? We had our first fire last night.
Beautiful night.
Here. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about the show today. The second hour, we have John Markoff on. He's
John
the
Markoff.
Science editor for the New York Times, and he has just finished a book called Machines of Loving Grace. It's all about artificial intelligence and robotics. So can't
wait to get his download. No stranger to that around here.
No, he's had a chance to check out everything in those fields that he feels compelled to do, and he has, and he's going to give us a report on artificial intelligence and robotics.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be in the second hour.
Right. Yeah, you've been curling up with that book lately.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Those are the staples of science fiction, eh? Robots, artificial intelligence, data, this Forbin project, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, well, those sci-fi that affects the real world, right?
That's it. Sci-fi into reality. This is the time that we're in.
Right.
You know, where all this is the real thing. I'm very excited about that.
Very cool.
And speaking of science fiction, one of the top news stories in this hour is that research at the University of Sussex in England has created a sonic tractor beam.
A sonic tractor beam?
Yes.
Boy, that sounds pretty sci-fi.
It is. It's very sci-fi. It's the world's first sonic tractor beam.
Wow.
Now, for those of you who are not familiar with tractor beams, it was a sci-fi invention used commonly in the Star Trek universe.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the Enterprise had this special beam you could turn on called a tractor beam. It was like a towing beam.
Mm-hmm.
You could carry something behind them. They could tow another dead starship or something.
Right.
You know, it was
They just flip on the energy field and boom, 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 boom. Whatever it is they focus the tractor beam on follows. Just
takes a
magnetic
lot of energy.
Lock.
Takes a lot of energy. I mean, you couldn't have the tractor beam on at the same time as shields on full.
That's right. You had to decide,
decide
what are you going to do with your power? Shield? Tow? Use a weapon? You only get
Captain,
to choose one.
Captain, if we increase the shields, we'll have to drop the tractor beam. What do we do?
Shouldn't have to choose.
10%, Scotty. The first tractor beams that can lift and move objects using sound waves have been built by a team that includes researchers at the University of Sussex. And these tractor beams, they can grab and lift objects. They have three ways in which they've figured out how to grab objects with sound. Okay? One is a tweezers approach, where they used an array of 64 miniature loudspeakers to create these sonic tweezers. They can pick up a small object like a styrofoam bead and move it around.
That just gives me such interesting ideas. Sound waves, picking something up, it would have to be invisible, right? So it's going to look like the thing is just floating in space.
It does. It looks like it's anti-gravity when you see this.
Mm-hmm.
We have a video up. You can check it out on our website, drfutureshow.com/links. And you'll see it. And yeah, it looks kind of sci-fi to see things floating in the air like that. It's
floating in the air. And just because of these little loudspeakers that are probably facing each other on some scale, are they tiny? Are they big? What size are these speakers?
It says the researchers used an array of 64 miniature loudspeakers driven at 40 kilohertz with 15 VPPs. The whole system consumes 9 watts of power, and it creates this high-pitched, high-intensity sound wave that levitates little beads, spherical beads, of up to 4 millimeters in diameter.
Hmm. Okay, so it's all very small.
Yeah, it's proof of concept right now. And the tractor beam works by surrounding the object with these high-intensity sounds, and it creates this force field that the objects can then be moved with. By carefully controlling the loudspeakers, you can either hold it in place or move it or rotate it, that sort of thing. Hmm. The team has shown that there are 3 different shapes of acoustic force fields that work. One is, as I mentioned, the little tweezers or a pair of fingers. The second is what they call an acoustic vortex, like a little miniature tornado of sound. Hmm. And you create a little acoustic vortex, and then the objects become trapped at the core of the vortex.
Sure, it sucks them into the middle like a little black hole.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can move them around from the center of the vortex because you control the vortex, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. And the third method that works is what you might describe as a high-intensity acoustic cage that surrounds an object and holds it in place from all directions.
Ah, don't move.
Surrounded.
You're surrounded
Hands
by
up,
sound.
Yes.
Well, so, that's a really sci-fi idea.
Isn't it? Yeah, so I thought it kind of fit well with this, with the Star Trek mythos here.
Totally.
So it's a work in progress. They're working on bigger versions of acoustic levitation that they're trying to levitate right now, a soccer ball. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to do it from a distance of 10 meters, like 30 feet away.
Mm. I remember a Dr. Future article from about a year ago where they were levitating a glob of water with sound waves. And so, you know, the sound waves were being directed from below and from above.
Yes.
And the water was kind of floating in the middle, and it did take the form of a sphere. Is very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's along the same lines. The whole idea of sound. And we're getting better at playing with sound and frequencies and the shape of sound. And as we do, we get better at creating different things. Like we couldn't create little miniature vortexes of sound before. Now we can. Now we can do little miniature tweezers with sound.
Miniature tweezers. Boing, boing. Yeah. I'm going to tweeze you out of here. Okay, we're going to go to a break right now here on the Dr. Future Show. So stay tuned. And there'll be more really interesting stuff when we get back.
Welcome back to the future, folks. Yes, we've waited a long time for you to get here, but you can relax, you're here. And here's what we got for you. There is a way cool picture of the Milky Way that is out that you can actually look at online. It's the largest astronomical image of all time. 46 billion pixels. 46 billion pixels of our own local galaxy. The local one, the one we're in, you know, of the 100 billion galaxies. The local
right.
one. Yeah.
And it's not a photograph.
No, yes, it is.
Because how would we get a photograph of our galaxy? That would be impossible.
No, only if we want to include us in it. We can take a picture from the Earth, you know, look at and see the galaxy in the sky. You see that big cloudy looking thing that's out there at midnight or whatever, you know, when it's really dark out? That's the galaxy.
Well, you can take a picture of a piece of the galaxy.
Not the whole thing.
But to see
true.
The whole thing, I don't think that's possible.
No, no, but you get a big chunk of it. And they got 46 billion pixels of it. It's up online
billion.
That you can look at right now. You can go to the online tool on the page in our links page and check it out. You can zoom and zoom. If you have a tablet, you can just pinch and squeeze and go deep. And it's really fascinating because you can explore the galaxy with your fingers, literally. The reason why they made this was that the group at the Ruhr University Bochum were studying variable brightness star systems. And those are stars that get brighter and dimmer a little bit. The stars, they really twinkle, not just from our atmosphere, but because they really are changing in brightness, maybe because objects went in front of them, stuff like that. And as that happens, they change in brightness. Those are indications of something happening in those solar systems that are worth paying attention to, like planets. Planets going between us and the light of the star would create a fluctuation in brightness. So they wanted to study entire Milky Way in one shot to see how many brightness fluctuations we might be able to see in how many star systems. And they found when they made this picture, which was done in South America, they discovered 50,000 new objects with variable brightness. 50,000 in this one picture. And you can see that.
50,000 different variable levels of brightness in the 50, stars?
50,000 variable stars.
Wow.
Stars that change in brightness. Stars with stuff going on, man.
So what do you think is the best way to look at this picture of the Milky Way?
I liked it on the iPad, personally. They have an online tool. Go to our links page and go to the online tool links on the side of the press release that you'll see about this new image and to try it out. It's pretty cool.
All right. Okay.
All right.
I will.
All right. Good. That's what I was looking for. Thank you. All right. I'll do it.
Sorry. I was an inattentive peanut gallery there for a minute.
I know. Well, I know you guys out there will love that one. So, see, that's the kind of science I like where you actually have a direct experience. You know, where you actually can.
Internet, I think that this has really become our culture. We're a culture of people who show each other stuff on the internet, really cool things. That's filling our time. That's keeping us happy.
And you know, we're all into our home in various ways. And for me, the galaxy is our home. For all of us, really. It's our local backyard. Mm-hmm. I mean, the 100 billion galaxies, that's ridiculous, right? There's more than grains of sand on the beaches. Mm. Oh, man. So we might as well get to know our local grain of sand.
Absolutely.
You know.
Right.
Speaking of grains of sand, there was a very curious article about how cheap oil will cause the Saudi elites to go bankrupt in 5 years if the oil stays cheap. All right, so if the oil stays cheap for 5 years, the Saudi elites will go bankrupt.
Oh, dear.
No, is that necessary?
What's their bad thing? What's their price point?
It's $50 a barrel. If the oil stays below $50 a barrel for 5 years, the Saudis' cash reserve will be exhausted, and with it will go all the social stability that the lavish spending for the Saudi elites brings. Also, on the chopping block would be the other Saudi export. Militant Islam.
Saudi will have the Saudis will have the same problem as Greece. They'll just be out of money.
Well, I don't think they'll ever be as bad as Greece, but you know, see, that's the thing is that if we shift our energy resources to our own backyard, if we do that, then these problems around the world won't get so amplified. Our interest amplifies things, and what was once some desert tribes are now the richest countries on the planet. You know, it's an amazing effect that we've had because of, and now it's not just us, of course. Now it's China and everyone else is industrialized. So the oil, if we move from oil there to oil here, or even better, beyond oil, then that changes the political landscape and the conversations that we have in it. And it doesn't amplify all these regimes that haven't had to deal with democracy and haven't had to deal with reformation and change and revolutions and learning about democracies and all these things. You don't have that amplification effect. And so that's good. That changes what our national news pays attention to.
Sure. Yeah, nothing is going to be able to cling to the past. The Middle Ages is over, and you cannot keep it out. The people want to know. The people want access to their cell phones, to their internet, to their global culture. So you can't feed them fairy tales from hundreds of years ago and have them go unquestioned. It's just like those days are gone.
Yep. Meanwhile, the break-even oil price in Kuwait is $49 a barrel, and the magic number in Qatar is $56, and the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, needs $73 a barrel.
I see. So.
So if you can do energy cheaper than that, then they're out of the picture.
Well, I imagine their money managers are going to invest globally.
They'll change their focus, right? And it won't be so much from that resource. They'll have to think about generating resources some other way besides oil.
Well, don't you think the AIs are just going to take over? I mean,
well, that's for the second hour, my dear. Let's not jump to conclusions. And take over, that is not a term I...
The AIs are just going to trade until they get the stock portfolio that they like, right?
So yeah,
that's how it works now in the money markets.
Okay, well, you can bring that up with John.
What do I know?
That's a big,
I
know,
just saw
a
TED Talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's true. We use AIs in more and more interesting ways, and they will become a factor, but we're not even sure what AI is just yet. We need to define it. So.
Artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Actual stupidity. No.
Well, it's a big thing. And Siri, we know we're all... Anyway, we'll talk about this next hour. Come on. I got a few other stories here.
Go, baby.
China plans the world's largest super collider. This is the latest thing.
China.
Chinese scientists are completing plans for the Circular Electron Positron Collider, the CEPC. It's a supergiant particle collider, 50 miles in circumference. It'd be twice the size of CERN, twice the size of the big one in the planet right now, the one outside of Geneva.
I guess they have a lot more space in China.
Well, a lot more interest. You know, the collider complex is designed to smash together electrons and antimatter counterparts and then massive protons. They hope to recreate the hyper-energy conditions that dominated the Big Bang. Yes, the universe itself. The conditions that dominated following the Big Bang, immediately after the Big Bang.
We just want to do a little teeny tiny particle of the universe's energy at the Big Bang, which was the beginning of all that is. Well, you just want a little teeny piece of it to try.
Not all of it, but, you know, all the matter, the energy, the space-time, that's it. Matter, energy, and space-time. What more do we care about?
Spirit, happiness, health, love.
Well, let's see. Are those
feeling good in our bodies?
Do all those things come from matter, energy, and space-time?
Or? They do. We are made of matter, energy, and space-time, and then we add so much more. That's the beauty of being human.
Okay, well, I see that you'll fit right in this new environment here.
That's right.
They're forming a perfect circle-shaped city. All right, so they're building a city around the collider, a giant circular city, hosting global leaders in experimental particle physics and new tech firms, future-oriented scholars, designers, all part of this Chinese collider complex city that they're building. So it's an entire ecosystem. It's like a human colony based around the collider in the shape of it, 50 miles in circumference.
What I like about this thing that I think is very different than here in the U.S. is that the Chinese are building a whole scientific physics community. It's like a theme park in there in the middle of this 50-mile radius.
I know. It's like a whole city, literally. Very interesting. I guess the fact that they've built 100 new cities, this is just another one, only this is a science city that's oriented toward the space-time, matter, and energy.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so a very interesting piece on that. 230 scientists on it right now working to go.
Fascinating.
So, isn't it?
They like to do everything big over there.
I know, right?
Right. Yeah. All right, we'll be right back after a few CBS News. Stay tuned.
Hey, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Now, here's a new tech I'm excited about because it ties into several of my favorite things. Clothes, gadgets, and the skin.
The skin. I was going to say
biosensors.
I think you like clothes, but I think you like being naked more. And that's why you're so into these embeddable technologies, because it's kind of like you don't have to wear anything.
Well,
you can just become that thing.
Well, you have a point there. But this isn't embeddable. This is an ultra-thin, wearable patch. It's like a patch, right, that you would do for like nicotine or
vitamins.
This patch works by imperceptibly heating up the skin underneath it. Just heating up the skin a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it records the movement of the heat as it dissipates. That tells you information about arteries and veins and the way in which flows are happening in the arteries.
That is amazing.
See, and that's very interesting because then that data can feed directly to your little AI pocket computer. We call them cell phones now.
Your pocket detector.
Your little personal doc, you know, because everyone will have their own little AI doc that tracks all your body functions that it's capable of and keeps track of your health.
Okay, here's a creative invention. These are like little round band-aids, right, that you can put on your skin and then they'll measure what's going on just below the surface, right? So I'm just imagining these fashions where you have different colors, sort of like mood things, you know, and so you just stick them on certain places on your body and then that becomes your fashion statement. Are you wearing purple today to measure your blood flow or are you wearing blue to measure your sugar?
It gives me an idea. I'm thinking that not only should it feed data as a biosensor to your personal doc, your personal AI doc, but it should also change color like a mood ring kind of thing and give you information about your blood flow yourself. So in case you want to pay attention to your own body directly, you have some sensory information which you can pay attention to. And others too, they could notice when your patches change color.
Cool.
What we need to do is come up with a patch language, color language that makes sense to everyone. it probably could happen in fashion initially. So yeah, these patches, these are a form of biosensors called epidermal electronic monitoring systems. Mm-hmm. Epidermal electronic monitoring systems.
Right. And you don't put them under your skin. It just looks under your skin by measuring what's going on.
Yeah. It's a non-invasive technique. It just heats up your skin a little bit and then it monitors how the heat dissipates. And from that dissipation signature, you can see how various veins and capillaries and stuff are working, mm-hmm. you know, how well they're pumping fluids.
Right.
Which is really cool. Instead of just having a heart rate number every so often, you actually have an awareness of the entire circulatory system as it's working. Because it's an ongoing system. It's like a freeway. There's always stuff happening on it. It's not just measuring the traffic conditions, you know, twice a year at the doc's office. No, it's a full-time motion. It's a system in your body that's moving molecules around, and yeah. you get to see how it's working.
You know, with the computers giving us so much more information, you
it makes
know,
it more
sensing,
alive, you know?
Yeah, it's sensing our systems in ways that are at least new. Apparently, our body obviously has a whole bunch of sensing apparatus that we don't consciously pay attention to. But what we're doing is giving ourselves tools to consciously pay attention to so much more that it's going to give us an entirely new way of managing our health.
Yeah, the traffic conditions of our internal interstate. Yeah, literally it is. The blood systems are like a freeway system, probably way more complicated.
than the highways.
However, we could at least get highway level information. We could have a Waze for our system.
There you go. Right. That's it. It'll same kind of internet packet collision avoidance and detection that runs the internet will be running our blood circulation.
Absolutely.
Right.
From communication systems, the nervous system, then it goes from that to the transportation system. In our case, the circulatory system, I think, is comparable to the interstate system.
Right. And, you know, this makes me think when people say, okay, when all of the old jobs become obsolete, what's going to happen to people? People are going to have to invent new ways to benefit from all of this information that we're collecting.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, that the biology gives us a map in order to keep track of all the information.
Mm-hmm.
So if we just think of our circulatory system as reading a traffic map, we'll understand our own personal circulatory systems a lot better than the current parlance.
Well, that's a nice metaphor for people our age, but I understand that kids today who grew up with iPhones don't know how to read maps anymore. They're too used to Siri figuring it out for them.
I don't know. I think the maps can get more interesting on the phones. I think they can be animated and they can move and they can have a depth to them.
Sure. Actually, I don't think I learned map making from maps. I'm pretty sure that there were all kinds of exercises in schools and there were games where you became aware of spatial relationships because you were looking at a board or you were playing with that kind of spatial awareness. Mm. So same thing with trying to map your blood. We used to have stuff like Operation, right? So we learned where the organs were. Now they're going to have like Alex Gray type maps of the energy systems, and they'll have to learn how to use colors to increase the flow of a certain meridian.
Yeah. You'd be able to muck with it for sure. Do interesting layers. You know, remember those layers in the student encyclopedias as a kid? You have different layers of the body.
They'll add a few more layers made of energy and light and nano circuitry and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think 3D holographic representations of our personal nervous system that we look at in virtual reality will be pretty normal. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to look at your system and see what's up.
Sure.
The whole thing. I mean, initially with this transdermal tech, we're talking about specific locations that you initially send a probe to, so to speak, and see what's going on there. But before long, we'll have the whole body being monitored in real time.
Sure. I'm imagining that instead of just going out and suntanning, you know, going out and sitting under the sunshine and absorbing whatever random rays happen to be coming in the air, you'll go out and you'll put on your hollow filter suit and you'll just amp up the rays that you want to improve your health with, right?
Totally. It'll be a fashion statement, too.
Right, right. Going to go in your tanning booth, and it'll just be a bubble between you and the sky.
I like it. Let's go there. Let's put that together in our ideal VR world, where these things already exist, and we can
absolutely
bask in them.
The rainbow dome. Just turn on the rays you want to enjoy today.
Well, here's one thing that is a challenge. Better health also means better motion in the body, exercise. Mm-hmm. Exercise and better health are pretty unequivocally connected.
Sure.
And motion is the challenge for some. However, what the Public Library of Science has recently released from the Jackson Labs is a study that shows how long-term aerobic exercise can prevent age-related brain changes.
This is not news. People know this. Right? Use it or lose it?
Well, here's the thing is that you can do simple things, aerobic exercise. You can do aerobic that really can, is a major factor in Alzheimer's, old age, related to motion of oxygen molecules in the brain, mm-hmm. you know, which motion does. It gets more oxygen molecules into the brain. Now, that is core to dealing with stuff like Alzheimer's. Now, if you can get the oxygen to the brain through like other exercises, maybe like fast breaths, mm-hmm. you know, for example, things
yeah,
like
Ben
that.
Yeah, Ben Fuchs loves to do breath work.
Yeah, you don't have to go outside. You don't have to run or you don't have to do heavy duty exercise.
Sure. Yeah, so that's mild, gentle here. Exercise that's age appropriate. Sure.
And find out what you potentially might get, like if it's Alzheimer's, and then do the exercises that help reduce those conditions, like more blood to the brain. Mm-hmm. And they're finding with mice, this definitely works.
Cool. Oh, I love these experiments they did with mice. They basically gave some middle-aged mice a big old mice hamster wheel, which as soon as the mice had access to it, they started running 2 miles a day.
Yeah. Yeah, just like the young mice and the old mice both ran 2 miles a day in these hamster wheels.
Yeah. I would really like a human-sized hamster wheel to run on. You know, that would be kind of fun. It makes me think of 2001, right?
Of you're course. On the spaceship.
Yeah.
No, you're a giant hamster. No, something in between.
Well, I mean, we take walks a lot. And yeah. after about the 50th, 100th time you've taken the same walk, you're not as stimulated by it. Of course, it always feels good to move. But imagine if you could take a walk on, say, a media-driven hamster wheel. Where
well, it would be a VR experience then.
Yeah.
Immersive walk.
Right.
Immersive VR walking.
That's right. That's right. You walk and you can play, oh, just dear. Like you play music now, you can play different visuals.
Let's do the Swiss Alps today. I feel so Sound of Music. Excuse me, Austrian Alps.
Sounds good.
You like that?
Yeah, definitely.
No, I like the beaches of Brazil. Let's go walk on there for a while.
Wonderful. I'll meet you there.
All right. You could. You can meet people in these various worlds and get exercise together. That is key too, I think. You know, when you walk with your friends, definitely gets things going.
That's it.
Oh, well, there are certain friends anyway.
That's our favorite thing to do. Walk with our friends.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So physical activity is known to help ameliorate cognitive decline and sensory motor deficits seen in both humans and as well as the mice. So, hey, let's do it.
All right. Well, listen, folks, we're going to go take another little break here and then we'll be back with more of the Dr. Future Show. Hang on.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. I thought it was pretty cool over Halloween that Google had their autonomous cars out braking for kids in Halloween costumes.
There you go. Dodging for ghosts.
The Google engineers are trying to make sure that their autonomous cars are extra cautious around children. So they asked employees and their little trick-or-treating kids to trek around some parked autonomous cars.
That's great.
So the car's sensors and their software got a little extra practice time recognizing kids in different shapes and sizes and costumes and masks and stuff like that.
Oh, boy. So now the autonomous vehicles can recognize goblins and ghouls and ghosts and fairies and angels and brides and pirates and all that stuff.
That's right. The Google self-driving car team said, quote, "Halloween's a great time to get some extra learning done." Close quote. "We teach our cars to drive more cautiously around children. When our sensors detect children, costumed or not, in the vicinity, our software understands that they may behave differently. Real different from, you know, the concept that you see in the movies, like Terminator."
Right.
Yeah.
Said, yellow light. Speed up.
Speed up. Very different. Just the opposite. And that's a good thing. That's reality is much better than some of our cautionary tales, I think.
There you go. Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm glad the Google designers want the autonomous cars to avoid children. It's very important that the robot designers want good things for humanity, because otherwise it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, and they should be able to avoid goblins. Right now they have 73 cars in their fleet. That's triple the number of 23 licenses they had last May.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That's just licensed autonomous vehicles, huh?
Yeah. But they're still wondering who to play with. Should Google work with one of the big boys like Mercedes or Ford or Chevy or Apple? Maybe they should go with Apple. That would be the end of a long, long conflict between Google and Apple.
Sure. Now that they're called Alphabet, may as well just merge with Apple.
Yeah, right.
Right? Alphabet is earlier in the alphabetical system than Apple.
Maybe, but they're very different cultural experiences.
That's true.
Different
sort
corporate.
Sort of Spock versus the Borg.
Yeah, but they are both human, so there is that with the commonality.
Mm.
And they are in the same field.
Currently human with aspirations to be other.
Yeah. Anyway, they're looking for a partner to build their autonomous cars with one day.
Okay. So if you want to apply, who should you call? Who are you going to call?
Well, you see, it depends on what you want to do. Like, Googlers are going to be focusing on the software and the artificial intelligence to run the driverless cars. But the company doesn't necessarily want to get into the automobile manufacturing business.
Mm.
So that's what they need an experienced manufacturer to team up with.
Sure. Okay, GM. Here's your big chance.
One clue in this area. I do have connections with Stanford. A lot of Google-Stanford connections and the whole autonomous car thing connected there. But apparently Toyota is teaming up with Stanford and MIT to work on AI needed to make auto manufacturing cars more autonomous. So there you go. They're putting in about $50 million into that project.
All right. Go Toyota.
Yeah.
Or is that Google putting in the 50?
No, Toyota.
Toyota.
50 mil to Stanford. No, you give money to Stanford. Stanford doesn't give you money.
Just checking.
Not typically, unless I miss a turn here somewhere in this entrepreneurial age we're in.
Yeah, well, things will be changing. Once the AIs take over all of the financial transactions, I believe that you'll be able to just send your name into a government list and say, put me on the list to, my account is open, please deposit necessary funds so that you can tax me and pay for everything you need to, but don't bother me with the details. And I'll show up for my assignments.
They'll tell you what to do, huh?
That's right. The AI who knows me and loves me
knows what you like to do.
Has been listening carefully while I detailed my ideal scenario for how to spend my time. Yeah. The AI will set my appointment calendar and make sure I get to where I need to go with my genius intelligence. And then the government will automatically fill up my coffers with the discretionary funds I need to do discretionary things.
And what will you do with this resources that your government gives you?
I will improve reality as we know it and make it better for the future.
Mm-hmm. And they'll have some feedback on this, how successful
monitor all my transactions, and then they will use those transactions to map out the new norm for next year when demand will be extrapolated from the previous demand. And so the economy will be based on the steady state of people wanting what they want and making it happen.
A self-evolving system.
A self-evolving system enhanced and augmented by the AIs in charge of all of the transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How long do you think before such a thing could be implemented?
Well, I think it's going to be in the hearts and minds of the people. How soon do they want their AIs to take over the money? And how fast can we make it easy instead of hard for everyone on the planet to be taken care of?
So, Mrs. Future, how many of our bills are on auto payment?
All of them.
All of them. I see. Okay, we have implicit trust then.
Well, we have a certain amount of auto payment on the income side, and we have a certain amount of auto payment on the outgo side. And so the AIs are in charge of making sure it all balances. And I just tune in every now and then, make sure that none of the pools of funding are too low and none of the demand on the funding is too high. You know, I just make sure that they match.
Stays balanced.
Stays balanced, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what the computer age is making easy. So we just have to keep making it easier and easier for those things to happen so that people don't have to spend time worried about it. They can just figure out what they're good at and how they'd like to please each other in the world.
Well, that's the whole thing of a nice balanced economic system to keep us all happy as we move into an age where maybe there's not jobs anymore.
Right.
You know, which is rapidly happening.
It would be nice if we had, instead of saying not jobs, Jobs really is a stand-in for doing your part to not be in desperation. And if we could just kind of eliminate desperation first, you know, Jeremy Sachs, the end of poverty, all that stuff. If we could just design a world where desperation was never an option, and then we would filter people out according to what they are actually good at in terms of how they can apply themselves with their time. Mm.
I guess we try to do that. You know, having Cooter tests and various type of aptitude testing going on, we're trying to figure out what people are good at.
Sure.
And trying to match them up with the appropriate jobs.
Yeah. You know, yeah, we just have to stop treating people like they're cannon fodder and like they somehow have to go fit themselves into something outside themselves or else they're going to be failures. We really need to
find out exactly what they actually know.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to get the system to cater to the actual people.
And we will know that exactly, down to every behavior, I believe. From what I can see with the new robotic toys that are being designed for the kids now, they give the kids attention that no adult has for them. Right, they're there all the time, just like your Siri is there for you all the time.
And the kids get
the kids
to steer
toys
it
are robots
with
that
their
are there
interest
for them all the time.
Instead of school, where it's being steered by a teacher telling you what to be interested in.
Yeah.
Kids actually get to steer the AI learning tools according to their own interests.
And so, as
more
they
interdirected,
as they evolve together, who knows you better than your teddy bear?
Well, I hope you
right,
do.
In terms of your true intelligence and helping you and teaching you things, it's a two-way street. It's not like something just evaluating you.
I hope my teddy bear is at least as attentive to my needs as you are.
I would hope so. I should be at least as good as your teddy bear.
You're way better.
Oh, thank you. Well, I don't want to replace one for the other. The end is near, as St. Silicon
used to
say. Wow,
you don't want a replacement teddy bear to be better than you? Oh, my goodness. This is the reverse of the Stepford Wife conversation we usually have.
No, I don't want to take away your teddy bear. You can have, but just not between me and you. Not like the wolf. That's another story.
Yes.
Yes. This new design for the ultimate battery. You know I'm really into batteries.
You are a battery
mitochondrial
guy.
Yeah. And researchers have successfully demonstrated how several of the problems impending the practical development of the so-called ultimate battery could be overcome. They've developed a demonstrator of a lithium oxygen battery. It's more than 90% efficient, can be recharged more than 2,000 times, and it's been touted as the ultimate battery because of its energy density. It's 10 times the density of our lithium ion batteries in our laptops now. 10 times.
Is it possible that it will explode?
Well, it's funny you mention that because when you stop and look at it, the energy density of this new lithium oxygen battery is as dense as that of gasoline. Now, look how much power is in a gallon of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, that's pretty amazing. Have you ever lit up a gallon of gas?
No,
like Burning Man or yeah, it's remarkable.
It's scary.
I mean, it's a huge amount of energy. I mean, just think that gallon of gas is moving a couple of tons of metal 20 miles, 30 miles.
So that's the problem they have to overcome. It may be more,
so it's
more
as dense as that. It's as dense as gasoline.
There's more energy there, but can we access it without hurting ourselves?
Will it catch on fire?
Yeah. It sounds more dangerous than autonomous cars to me.
Well, us sentient monkeys do like to play with danger and push the edge on the technology a little bit.
Right.
But we do want more density of energy in our energy storage, and batteries should be at least as good as gasoline, eh?
Okay.
I mean, it's only makes sense.
All right, so battery breakthrough, that's item number one. Now you got 1 minute for item number two.
Oh, no.
Come on, Dr. Future, you can do it. What's this? Can't miss factoid for the future before we go to our break.
Oh, yes. We are thinking of virtual reality, but not for humans, but for mice.
Oh,
yeah, there's
wow.
a group that have created the ultimate virtual reality world for mice.
This sounds like too much time on their hands. No offense.
No. It's good for neural research. You understand. It's a tactile virtual reality system for mice. Genelia Research Campus in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses a pair of movable walls to tickle the whiskers on each side of the mouse's face. By moving the walls in the shape of a virtual tunnel, the mice are tricked into thinking they're actually inside the real thing, that they really are in a tunnel, even though they're not.
This is kind of adorable and kind of like makes your eyes roll. It's like, what? We're doing VR for mice? We're doing a whiskers interface?
Yeah, whiskers interface.
It's cute, but boy. All right, folks. This is Dr. Future Show on KSEO Santa Cruz, and we'll be back with John Markoff after you get some news and traffic and weather. And stay tuned, Dr. Future Show, coming right back.